Here we are. This is Confessions of a Disney Cast Member.
An audio journey through the lives of cast members from across Disney and Universal, far and wide, old and new.
So sit back, strap in, and let us bring the magic to you.
Another episode of Confessions of a Disney Cast Member, and today me and Bradley are joined by the lovely Charlie. So welcome, Charlie.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so happy to have you.
Yeah, super excited. Thank you so much for coming on, Charlie. You're obviously in the place we all want to be in right now. Very, very jealous. How is Orlando?
It's very hot right now. We're definitely getting into that time of year where it's the humidity and all the heat, but it's good. We had a lovely barbecue yesterday for Easter, so that was very nice. But yeah,
we wish we were over there, honestly. But before we start, Charlie, we're going to talk about your Instagram. You're on TikTok, YouTube. So do you want to tell us all about your socials and where people can go and find you?
Yes. So on all forms of social media, my username is A Brit of Charlie, like a bit of Charlie because it's a bit of my life, but a Brit because I'm British. A little bit of play on words there. Can't say I created it myself. I actually did a poll on my Instagram when I was changing my username, and someone created it for me, and then I sent them a gift card to say thank you. So, bit of fun trivia there, but yes, I am on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all underneath that name. I've been doing it for 4.5 years now, so I would love if you could join me over there on my platforms.
Amazing stuff. Yeah, super, super exciting, and love all your content, Charlie, as well. It's just it's so nice to see British people doing content creation over there and being there in real time. Again, it does make me super envious because I wish I was there doing it, but life is life and we just get to live through you instead. So all of that info will be down in the description of this episode and over on our Instagram as well. But before we get into your journey, Charlie, we obviously always start these episodes with a little Disney quickfire. So are you ready, Charlie?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. So question one of this probably very long Disney quickfire, because they're always longer than they should be. If you had the choice of living in one Disney hotel for the rest of your life, what one would you pick and why?
I think I'd have to choose Disney's Coronado Springs Resort. It's my favorite resort, and I think it's really underrated because it feels like a deluxe resort, but it's actually moderate. So you're paying like less, but you still feel as if you're staying at one of the bougie, nice resorts. Specifically the tower, though. I would need to be living in the tower. But they have so many different food and drink options. They have the bar at the top of the tower called the Dahlia Lounge, which is my favorite place to go on property. I think they have the best coffee on property. They have all the different pools. They do the outdoor movies. So I think as long as I was in the tower, that's where I would pick to live.
I think that is one of the best answers. I love Coronado Springs. I honestly think since they brought that tower, it is up the game so much. And like you said, Dahlia Lounge, Toledo's up there. You've got the three bridges in the water, the Sangria flight. If anyone's listening and is going to Coronado, please go and get that Sangria flight at Three Bridges. Amazing.
You've made me want to go and get it today, so maybe I'll do that.
I wouldn't be surprised if in the next few years the tower ends up being its own deluxe part of the moderate resort. I could see that happening because it makes the Coronado is so big anyway, and it obviously offers so much, but the tower does just offer that extra bit. I've not been, but from everything I hear from you, Save, and from anyone that's been on this podcast, it sounds just the place to be on property at the moment, to be honest.
Yeah, I really like it there. And I mean, the other rooms are really nice in the outer buildings, but they're just a bit further away from everything. So in that tower, it's just ideal because you're so close to everything.
Amazing stuff. Well, let's get booking that. And I'm going to be even more jealous if you're going to go there today and get that sangria flight. So.
I know.
All right. Second question of the quick fire, Charlie. What is your favorite table service at Disney World and why?
I think the Hollywood Brown Derby in Hollywood Studios.
Oh,
I feel like
right.
I would say this. But first of all, you can have it as part of the Fantasmic dining package. So if you want to eat there and then go and watch Fantasmic and have a better viewing area, you can do that. But their Cobb salad is the best salad I've had in my entire life. And I am not a salad girl. I am like the burgers, fries, all the bad stuff girl. But that salad, I dream about it. I went one time with Charlotte, who, Sophie, you know, because you worked with her. And I have not stopped talking about it since. And I just go specifically for that. It's so good.
Oh, I have never ever thought to go to the Brown Derby, honestly. Like, but people do. I think people either are stans or they're like, skip it. So I do think I have to try it now.
Yeah, and they also have a margarita flight, and that is delicious.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, but you have to be sat in the restaurant for it. You can't order it at the little to-go bar. So another reason to not in there.
Yeah, I think when I think Hollywood Studios, I always think sci-fi and 50s prime time. I don't really think of Hollywood and Vine, Brown Derby. Is there even another table service? And I've never seen before. Oh, Mamma Melrose. Yeah, exactly. So I think because they're so heavily themed, those two, and they're almost a bit like an event. Oh, you got Woody's, the Round Up Barbie. You've got loads in studios now, but yeah, Brown Derby on the radar, especially for the margarita flight, because Mexico is always, I always turn left for the margaritas, so good to know. Right, final quick fire question for you, Charlie. If you could do a photo shoot inside any ride on Disney, and I'll expand it, if you want to say Universal as well, if you'd rather Universal, all access, which ride would you choose to have that photo shoot in?
I'd do the Tower of Terror, 100%. I get so jealous because I've seen people have it like magic made for them by cast members where they've been waiting in line and they've actually put them into the bit that's roped off with the front desk and all the cobwebs, and they've had pictures taken there. And I'm like, no, that's actually my dream. I would love that. I love the creepiness, and I just think it would be such a good photo shoot in there.
I did the backstage tour on my program, but it's at 4 a.m. in the morning. So like, I literally looked atrocious, not a scrap of makeup was on my face. So when you got to go behind the little desk and take a picture, I literally look like I've just crawled out of a hole. It is awful.
Very on brand for Tower of Terror, though, safe, right?
That's true, but I ain't putting on my Instagram that picture, that's for sure. It will not be on Instagram.
I want to see that. You'll have to send me it after.
Yeah, I will.
Well, some great answers, Charlie, and a great start to the podcast episode. But now, as we venture into your journey in Orlando and at Disney World, where did it all begin? We ask this every episode, but I think it's really interesting to know where your love for the company, the parks, the movies, where did that all start, and what was your inspiration for wanting to work at the Disney company?
So my mum used to take me and my sister when we were younger. She took us once, and then her brother actually moved to Orlando about 22 years now, I want to say, ago. So then that motivated us even more as a family to keep coming to Orlando and visiting. So we would come probably like every 2 years or every year, and I fell in love with it completely. And so then everything just in my personality and brain was Disney. And then I went to university and in 2015, and part of my 4-year course was I had to do a 1-year placement program, and I had to find where that was going to be. I was studying international events management, and Disney came and they did like a speech at the university about the Rose and Crown program, and I didn't apply, and I kicked myself afterwards. I was so jealous of everyone that started to get accepted, and there was a girl on my course that got accepted as well, and I was like, I should have done it. And then I saw a posting about specifically the Swan and Dolphin program, and I was like, oh, this is still on Disney property. It's Marriott, so it's a little bit different, but I'd still be living and working there for an entire year. And so that's when I went ahead and applied for it. But I had lived Disney my entire life before that.
You can tell that you've been in the States, though, because you said Marriott, and we all in the UK say Marriott, right?
Marriott. I do. I pick up. I know, I pick up the phrases and the pronunciations, and then I'll speak with British people and they're like, what did you just say? And I'm like, oh no, sorry.
It's okay. You're a Brit and an Orlando girl now. It's okay. You have to do both.
Thank you. Thank you.
But obviously, talking about the start of the Swan and Dolphin program, you decide to go and do that. How does the application process work for that one? Is it through Yummy Jobs? Like, talk us through you applying and getting out on that program.
So it is through Yummy Jobs as well as the CRP is too. So we filled out an application. I believe we had to write like a letter as to why we thought we would be a good fit. We had to put anything that we thought would make us eligible. So I had my degree on there as well. And then we had a Zoom call with Yummy Jobs as well. And I think that was like the short listing process. I didn't have to do anything in person. I know with the CRP, you have to go in person for an interview, but this was all online. And then I just waited for an email, and it was a couple of months, actually. I think I applied in the January, and I think I didn't find out that I was accepted until like the April or May, and it was start date of August. So it was a really quick turnaround after I found out I was going that I went, but it was a while that I was waiting, and I just got an email. They didn't like schedule a call or anything. It was just congratulations. I still remember I was sat in my living room at university and I saw the email come through, and I was with my friend's boyfriend and we weren't really very familiar. He was waiting for her to get home from work, and I just started screaming, and he was like, what on earth is going on? And I was like, I just got accepted. I'm moving to Disney World. And he's like, okay, great.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And honestly, for one, you know, that email really has changed the trajectory. Is that the right word? Trajectory?
Yeah.
I can't pronounce that. Of your life. Like that one email now. But obviously, you get accepted, you head out, it's a quick turnaround. Walk us through what working at the Swan and Dolphin's like. Like, what roles did you kind of do? Because I know it's kind of varied, isn't it?
Yes. So the first 2 months that I was there, I was actually in recreation. So it was by the pools and in the health clubs doing, like watching people on the water slides, even though we weren't considered lifeguards. We didn't have lifeguard training, but we had to like observe that, make sure everyone was safe. We had to like replenish all the things in the health clubs that they have there, host the campfires with the s'mores and things for the children and the little outdoor movies, games, things like that. So I think that was just to start us off getting comfortable like in a different country and being away from everyone and doing something kind of fun at the beginning. And then after them 2 months, we moved into the front office for the last 10 months of the program. So it was split differently. I think I did 4 months on the front desk, and then the last 6 months of my program I was like backstage and guest services with the headsets on, taking calls from both internal and like external guests. But the guest services part of my program was my favorite part. I loved like getting presented problems and having to find solutions and just making magic, because that's where you were really able to see like what kind of people were coming to stay at the hotel, if they were celebrating anything, and then you could, you know, get amenities sent up to their room and things like that. So I really enjoyed that part. The front desk was definitely the hardest part of the program, because sometimes people aren't very nice when they come to Disney. I think everyone likes to think that guests are always really nice, but sometimes it's not all like sunshine and rainbows. So that was definitely the most challenging part, but I loved the entire year. Like, I will always say that was the best year of my life. And like, you're right, it completely changed everything for me.
I think it's interesting what you say there about the front desk, because I think it's a real pinch, that is a real pinch point of a person's vacation, where they could either be the most excited that they're probably going to be, because they're walking into the walked like into the lobby, they feel in that Disney buzz, they've got Epcot right by them, but then on the other hand, you don't know what their flight was like, you don't know what their like how it was getting through immigration, could they get a taxi, like there's so many things that could go wrong up until that point before they get on Disney property, and like now the magic starts, that you could end up being that first point of contact that they just want to but yeah, it can be like, as Sophie and I worked in guest experience at Disney as well, it can be really difficult to manage those expectations. Would you say that working as you've been to Disney so many times, working at Swan and Dolphin, you've still got those opportunities then to offer that Disney magic?
Yes, so we weren't as freely able to do things like Disney wise. Like we couldn't be like, oh, we'll give you fast passes because we didn't have access to that. But we could do things like room credits, or we had or they still do have a Disney store in the lobby of both the Swan and the Dolphin. So we were able to give like gift cards for that, or like have things from the store sent up to the room and things like that. So we were able to make magic or like make things better by providing a bit of magic, but it was definitely a lot more limited than if you were working like at a Disney specific resort or on Disney property.
Well, obviously, taking out and looking into, I would say we spoke a little bit about the job. Could you give us like some pros of doing this program? So if someone was wanting to apply, I know it's not back up and running just yet, but hopefully soon it comes back because the world is getting back to normal. We don't know when this will relaunch, but could you give us some pros that you would say of applying for this program?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're in the hospitality industry and you think that you would like to have a career in it, it's a really good place to start. It's one of the biggest hotels, I think, in the world. Like now it has 3,500 rooms with the addition of the Swan Reserve. So even when I was working there, it was 2,300 rooms. It was crazy. It's very busy.
That's like a village of people.
Yeah. On really busy days, we would have like 1,000 check-ins and 1,000 check-outs, and you would work 10 hours and you would blink and it would be over. But it was the craziest experience, but I learned so much about myself, how to like handle yourself in situations of like conflict or of like making magic, how to organize your time, how to prioritize. Like we learned so many things. And I always say, if you were able to thrive in that environment, you can do anything. And I'm still friends with so many people that worked at the Swan and Dolphin. And we always say like, nothing can ever compare to that. That was like the hardest thing any of us have ever done. So if you can get through that, you can literally get through anything in life. But it also was amazing having like friends from everywhere, because it's not just England who get hired for the program. Like we had people from Canada, France, literally everywhere. And so it was really nice getting to work with so many different people, learning about everyone's cultures and building this community. And I think it just helps you so much with like personal growth too. And I just honestly couldn't recommend it enough. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
I think one of the things that people don't realise with the CRP, even though it's pretty obvious, but until you're there, you don't realise that you're literally just surrounded by people from the UK. So you don't necessarily get that cultural experience that you can get on some of the other programmes because you are surrounded by people from the UK. And again, there are perks to that. Like I've got some of my best friends that live around the UK now, but people that go out there and think, oh, I'm going to meet people from Canada, I'm going to meet people from Japan. And it's really hard to do that when you're working in the UK pavilion. Like it's not easy. But did that, working with the people that you worked with, did that translate to working to your housing situation as well? And because I know that housing was a little bit different, and who knows what will happen when the program comes back, if those customers will be at Flamingo or not. But did that translate, and were the people that you're working with the people that you lived with over in housing as well, or your version of housing as well?
Yeah, so I think on my specific arrival group, the August arrival group, there was 18 of us for the front office program, and then there was I think 24 culinary program. They did a culinary program as well. So in my apartment, it slept six. It was actually tiny, and it should have only slept like three, but it slept six. And I had my actual roommate, so who shared the same room as me, she was from England, so there was us two, and then the other four people, one of them was from Canada, one of them was from Russia, one of them was from the Philippines, and the other one was from Hong Kong. So we were from all different places. And one of the girls was culinary and the rest of us were the front office program. So there wasn't really any rhyme or reason as to who you lived with specifically. They tried to make sure that you at least lived with one person that would be going in at the same time as you, because unlike the CRP, they don't have transportation. So we had to get Ubers or fend for yourself. So they wanted to make sure that we could at least have somebody to kind of split that with, which pretty much you were always working with somebody. But then, everybody else was just split up between apartments in a similar manner.
Was that amazing. Kind of a challenge? Obviously, talking about Sable Palms, which is where you guys were, right, was straight across the street from Vista. So I used to always like think, why on earth did he not just let them come in and use the bus? Like, I thought it was insane. So was this quite a challenge for you guys?
It definitely was a challenge. There were so many nice managers or members of staff that worked there permanently that would say, hey, if you finish at the same time as me, we don't mind dropping you off at Sable Palms, which was so nice of them, because they just knew like we were there for only for a year and we weren't being paid a lot. So that definitely helped. And some people did get cars. So some people that were in our housing would get cars. And if they were in at the same time as you and they had space in their car, like they'd let you go with them. So that definitely helped as well. But I do think that there should have been some kind of transport. I think there was enough of us that it would make sense, even if they had to charge us just like something less than an Uber, because sometimes Ubers are really expensive depending on the times that you're going. And there are a few times like when we would work, say, run Disney race weekends where the Ubers couldn't get onto Disney property because the roads were closed for the race. So we were kind of just stuck, like, how are we going to get to work? So yeah, I definitely think that that could be handled a little better. And I hope that if they do bring that back, that's something that they look into.
Hopefully, I think them at Flamingo.
I was going to say, I think Flamingo is the easiest choice, isn't it? I just don't know. It's all about capacity, really, isn't it? I know Flamingo is much bigger than the four apartment complexes combined, but still, I think like where the parks are constantly expanding, we've got new attractions, even more college program every year, because it is one of the best ways, most efficient ways to hire cast members. It must be really difficult to work that out. But yeah, I think that...
No, they're allowing normal cast members to live there now. You don't have to be on a program to live there. They're leasing
a house. Like, regular.
Yeah, so there was a big email. This is the tea in Flamingo. There was a big email consolidating like three or four of the apartment blocks at West. And a lot of my friends got consolidated. That used to happen back in Disney House, and it's kind of normal. But blah, blah, blah. They all got consolidated at the back of West. I think it's Figment from Right. Anyway, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, all these adverts started coming up in cast services all around Flamingo saying that regular cast members could lease an apartment at Flamingo Crossings. So there is the space, but they did bring back the program because they're letting regular cast members stay there. So, yeah.
Game changer. That would definitely be a game changer if they did that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And obviously, like you said, you'd almost grown up visiting Orlando, but that first time going out there to live, I'm guessing that was still quite a different experience for you, right?
Oh, definitely. I actually cried the whole nine and a half hour flight. I'm not even joking. I sobbed from the moment that we took off. Well, I say we, it was just me. I flew by myself.
So, you and the 600 other guests on the flight there.
No, the person I was sat next to, it was a man and his wife and son were sat in front and they were from England, like traveling there for like their holiday. And I was sobbing and he was just like, oh my gosh. And then eventually he was like, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? Because I was young, I was 20. So he probably thought, what on earth is going on? And I spoke to them and I told them what was happening. And they were so nice. They literally stayed with me. Like, well, obviously he sat next to me the whole flight. But once we'd landed, they came with me and they stayed with me until I got my luggage. They walked me to meet Yummy Jobs. Oh, like, they were so lovely because I was so overwhelmed. And I actually suffer really badly with anxiety. I have since I was like 17 years old. And I was absolutely overwhelmed and just thought I'm just gonna have a panic attack. And they were so nice. They like took me through customs. They were really, really kind, and I still have them on Facebook. Like, we still keep in contact, but I will never forget them for that, because that was the ultimate act of kindness for someone that was very much in need at the time of like a parental figure.
Yeah, that's such a special moment. Now, like you said, you've got them still on Facebook, you can keep in touch with them if they're ever back, you know, you can be there for them. But that's such a lovely moment. But talking about Bradley saying moving there for the first time, could you give us like some highlights of that year of living in Orlando? As much as we're there to work, we are there to enjoy, go to the parks, visit other states. So could you give us some highlights?
Yeah, of course. Well, first of all, traveling between states is so easy. I think a lot of people wonder why a lot of Americans don't have passports. And it's literally because they can go to all these different states, and they're so completely different to each other, and it's really easy to travel between them. Like, they just need a driver's license to travel, which is so easy. And all of the states are so different. I went to as if how you see it on the films, like, it's literally like that. It was so magical. But it's so easy to fly between the different states. So that's a tip that I would give if you're doing a program, like, make sure you find time to travel during it. Even if you have to take like a red eye and then still go to work, like, just do it. You literally only live once, and you're going to be there for just that 1 year, and that year is going to go by before you know it. So just do everything that you can. Living by the parks was completely surreal. And I mean, I still live here now and it still is surreal, but just going from your shift and like getting to watch the fireworks or just hop on one ride and have a drink and walk around, like, it's so different than coming on holiday here. And I think that's definitely one of the most magical experiences. Definitely the friends that you make along the way. Most of the people on your program are going to be in the same circumstances as you, so they can relate to you if you're feeling homesick or you just need somebody to talk to. Like, everyone's going through the same thing, and I think that's really nice, because then you're able to share those feelings with each other and work through and share like what helps you. And I also met my now husband during my program as well, so you never know who you're gonna meet while you're out here.
That honestly, and following like your journey, like looking at your wedding pictures, because you know, when I got you on Instagram, I met you through Charlotte, I was like, oh my god, I want to see everything that Charlie's done. It's so amazing. So walk us through meeting your husband and tell us all about your wedding, because we all love to hear about a wedding on this podcast.
So when I actually flew out to my program, I actually had a boyfriend, and it was not my now husband, surprise. And it was funny because when I left England, one of my best friends, her mum was like, oh, you're gonna go to America and you're gonna find like an American man and you're gonna get married. And I said, absolutely not. I was so offended. I was like, no, I'm like with the love of my life, or so I thought. And long story short, that didn't end up working. And then a couple of months later, it was like right at the beginning of my program that fizzled out. So then a couple of months later, I was about to go into the front office portion of the program, and I was doing one of my last shifts in recreation, and I went into the office there and I saw my now husband David, and he was a front office manager, but he had come down to the recreation office to talk about the transition of the J1s, which is the visa that we were on for the program, for their transition from recreation to the front office. And I walked in and I was like, oh, hello, who is this? And I actually texted in the group chat that all of the J1s had, and I was like, everyone, I've just met like our new manager David Perez, and I put like loads of heart eyes, and everyone was, in fact Charlotte was like, oh my gosh, what was he like? And I said, he's so fit. That's what I said. And if you're listening and you're not from England, like, fit means hot, like, that's our word for hot. So anyway, then I introduced myself to him, and then a week later, moved up to the front office, and then I was working with him. So he actually was my manager, but he's not much older than me. He's just a couple of years older than me. But when I realized I was like interested in him, I told him, and I specifically remember this one night we had a party and he came, and he went to leave, and I was like, oh, I just want to let you know, like, I'm interested in you. And he said, I'm your manager, this is really inappropriate. And I was so embarrassed that I just ran away. I didn't wait to hear what he said, because he was like shouting my name, and I just ran away. And then I wasn't at work for the next 3 days, and when I got there back to work after the 3 days, he like pulled me to one side and he was like, okay, what I was saying is it's inappropriate because I'm your manager, but I actually am interested in you too. So like, if we really do seriously want to pursue this, we're just going to have to like be discreet about it, because I don't want it to look like favoritism or anything like that. But it ended up that literally 2 weeks after that, he accepted a job in Atlanta. And so he moved to Atlanta. And so then we could publicly date. And that is what we did. We dated for the whole year of my program, or the 10 months that were left of my program. And then I moved back to England, finished the last year of my university, graduated, and then moved back here to be with him.
Oh my gosh, that honestly, the way you were telling that, I was like, oh, I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, oh, did he reject you? What's going on? So I'm so glad that he got to tell you the other part of what he was trying to say when you were running away from him. So I'm glad he got to tell you.
Me too, because I was so panicked. I thought, I'm going to get kicked off my program for saying this. Like, I should have just kept my mouth shut. But
it no, but good to have the guts.
Yeah.
It's good to have the guts because some people don't. And that's like, it's those turn left, turn right moments, you know, where it's like, if I turn this one way and make that one decision, it could literally change the rest of my life, which it obviously has for you.
Oh, shit, you're shot. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I think the liquid courage might have helped a little bit that evening.
Yeah, always helps a little bit.
So obviously you're married now. Tell us like where you got married. The photos look beautiful. There are some photos in the podcast episodes. Some people will see them already, but tell us all about the wedding.
So we got married in Paradise Cove, which is like a man-made beach kind of thing here in Orlando. It's actually right next to Sable Palms, so it's in the Lake Buena Vista area. And we were originally meant to get married January of 2021, but because the borders were closed from COVID, we did have to postpone almost an entire year. So we ended up getting married December 17th of 2021. All of my family and friends flew in, my nephews. It was the best day of my life ever. And it was just magical. We got married there, and then we did wait a little while after our wedding to go on our honeymoon because we wanted to honeymoon around Europe. But so then we did that in the following June. But yeah, it was 2.5-ish years ago now. So yeah, still very happy and still the best day of our lives, definitely.
Oh, that's amazing, Charlie. I really, really like just love all of this. It sounds like it's all working out, and that's what we love to hear, especially in a post-pandemic world where I think everything was just so uncertain. It's so nice to hear that there has been certainty in your life and that everything is moving in the right direction. Is there a difference to living in Orlando now that you're actually living there as like a full-time Orlando person? I don't know what the right word is,
brilliant. But
as opposed to living there on the program for a year, knowing you're going home at the end?
Yes, definitely. I think that even though it's still extremely magical, it's not all what you would think it would be. Like, I think you, when you're on your program, it's such a blur and it's such a rush, and you know you have like an end time, so you just like make the most of everything. But when you're living here permanently, I think it gets to be like any place that you live, but like, you kind of take things for granted. And like, I don't go to the parks as frequently as I know I should, and then when I do go, I'm like, oh my gosh, well, why am I not doing this more? But I definitely think you take some things for granted. And you know, there's definitely hard parts to living here, especially being like so far away from my family, because all of my family is still in England. David's family are incredible, so I'm so thankful that I have them, but it is difficult. And I think it's actually even harder when you go through difficult times, because you're like, how can I be living in the most magical place on earth and be feeling this way? So I think you just have to make sure that you give yourself grace and, you know, be kind to yourself if you do stay here permanently, but also make sure not to take everything for granted. Like, keep doing the things that you loved when you lived here for a short time, and then like you'll just make sure that you're happy. So
I think it's interesting the things that you've said there. As much it's interesting that I asked you that question from the perspective now of someone that's living there permanently, but I can still resonate with the things that you were saying. Being on my program, I do think that there is that homesickness, that idea, like that sort of conflict between, why am I feeling this way when I'm in this place that I put on such a pedestal? And so as much as those feelings are there now, I think that even people that have been on a year program can feel that as well. But I guess it's just, you just got to keep on swimming. That's what I would say, you know, like Dory, just keep on going.
It's interesting as well, because I used to speak to the bartenders about it. Like, we would have to walk the bartenders and like get at the end of their shift. Like, it's one of the podium jobs essentially. But I would speak to them. I was like, oh my God, like, I'd love to live here. Like, I'd love to do what you do. I remember one of them literally saying to me, they were like, yeah, I'm grateful. Like, I'm very grateful. Like, I love living in the sunshine. Like, I love my life. She was like, but I don't go to the pool. every day and sit in the sunshine. So I go home, sit on my couch and watch Coronation Street on my VPN. That's like, all right. But she was like, that's just life. She's like, you know, I go to the grocery store, I do my shop, I'm not in the parks on my days off because I'm tired. It's like a normal job at home. You would sit on the couch on your night off and just chill. She was like, so as much as like you guys all love it, she's like, you know, it is an amazing thing and we're so grateful. She was like, people overly glamorize. It's just like a regular place to live, like at home. And I was like, that's really interesting.
Yes, and I think to that point as well, that it seems from the outside that it's always so incredible and magical, and it's not like that all the time, because I have a lot of my friends from home and my family, and they're like, oh my gosh, you're so lucky that you get to go to the parks every day and you get to do this every day. And I'm like, I am very lucky, but that's not actually realistically what it's like. And it is like just living in any regular place. Like, I have a job that I do 45 hours a week, and then I'm so tired that I don't want to go to the parks every single day. So it definitely is just, you know, over glamorized. I would agree with that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of working, walk us on to what life is like for you now. What do you do on a daily, day-to-day basis? Walk us through the job.
So I am the director of social media for a travel agency, and I actually worked with the travel agency originally as a creator. So they found my Instagram account and they hosted David and I at Disney's Grand Floridian Resort and then on a Disney cruise. And they're based in New Jersey. So I had said to them after these two experiences, I was like, do you have a team in Orlando? And they said, no. And so I wrote a pitch, which is so unlike me because, as I said, I'm a very anxious person and I don't really have much confidence in myself. But I did write a pitch and I asked to meet with the liaison who I was speaking with for these experiences and then the CEO, and I pitched them like a position in Orlando where it would be full time and it would be someone who was able to be at the parks and be at the places that they were selling. And they really liked the idea, and so they hired me. And I didn't have a background in marketing. I had just got my first ever marketing job actually, with a different company, and that was the first one I'd had. Prior to that, I'd only ever done hotels, so I was all hospitality based. And yeah, I had my own pages, so I could use that as like a portfolio, I guess, to show previous work. But aside from that, I didn't have any experience, but they were just kind enough to take a chance on me. And I've been with them for almost 2 years now, I think.
Amazing.
Yeah, 2 years.
Again, I think that's like a pure example of just taking a shot and like biting the bullet, isn't it? And just saying, you know what, what's the worst that can happen? Someone can turn around and say no, and I have to deal with the no one else is like, I'm not embarrassment for anyone else, but that embarrassment for a few seconds, be like, oh, why did I say that? And after that, it's like, you know what? Actually, that gets you places. That's what you got to do. And you post, like you said, you got YouTube and TikTok and Instagram as well. And I think you use the parks as well for a lot of your own personal content creation as well, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I love to Disney bound, which if you don't know what that is and you're listening, it's using pieces from your own wardrobe to resemble looks of characters. So I really, really enjoy doing that. I've been doing that since I started my account, so 4.5 years ago. And I also do it with my dad sometimes, which is really fun.
I am obsessed with you and your dad. I was literally going to ask you this. Honestly, if anyone hasn't seen Charlie's content with her dad, it is so wholesome and so cute. I'm obsessed.
Thank you so much. We really enjoy doing it together. But yeah, and I definitely use the parks like as a place to take my photos or my videos. I love to provide tips for people, especially for the UK audience, because I feel as if a lot of creators, their audiences are in America, but I do have like a split audience. So I do have a lot of followers that are in the UK. And I just think about when I would come and like, there wasn't a ton of information, and now there is way more, but I like to think about things of like, if I was from the UK and I'm watching this, like what would be helpful to me? So I definitely use them though, as a place to create my content.
Also, you've worked with Disney Parks, right?
Yes, I did. I did last June. It was the Disney Parks UK team. So I didn't even realize this, but they have an entire team dedicated to promoting the Disney parks, so Disneyland Paris and Walt Disney World and Disney Cruise Line, but for the UK audience, because it's such a big audience for Walt Disney World and beyond, that they have their own team. So they contacted me last June when I was actually in England, and they said, we've seen your platforms, we would love to work with you. And so we did. I filmed an ad with them in Walt Disney World. So they had me and David stay at the boardwalk for 6 nights, and it was the best experience ever. We were filming every single day from 6 o'clock in the morning to like 11 o'clock at night. And we got to do the most incredible things. We got to go to Magic Kingdom 2 hours before it opened. So there was nobody in there except us. We got to do the same thing with Hollywood Studios. And at Hollywood Studios, they had Chewbacca come out and do like a private meet and greet with us. And at Magic Kingdom, they had Mickey come out and do a private meet and greet with us. And it was truly the best experience ever. I'm so, so lucky and so grateful for that. And I made really good friends with the Disney Parks UK team as well. They are the kindest, loveliest people ever. But that was really a dream come true, because I've wanted to work with the Walt Disney Company in some aspect with my account since I started it. And then for it to be the parks, but also like a UK representation, that definitely meant so much to me.
I mean, it is you, Charlie. It's literally that Brit moved to the UK, that moved from the UK to the US. And then, like you said, being that representative almost for us, like over at Disney. What an amazing experience. I think content creation is such an interesting thing that is constantly changing. And it's so hard. I mean, even what we're doing on podcasting, it can be so hard to work out what the right thing to do is. Like, you want to keep up with the trends, but you want to stay true to what you want to do as well. What would you say, like, your one piece of advice is for anyone that wants to create, or people that are creating Disney content, as someone who does do it?
I would say just be authentic and just be you. There is room for everyone on social media, and the things that make you special are you being yourself. Like, nobody is you. And I think if you're trying to be someone else or put on this front, it's so difficult and tiresome. And I think that's going to translate to your audience. They're going to know that you're not being genuine, and that's going to make them disinterested. And I just think that as long as you're being you and posting what makes you happy, that comes through in your content, and therefore will keep your audience engaged and wanting to be on this journey with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing advice. And I think something everyone should take, even if you're about to post that first video, I think just do it. We all start doing it. At least we all should start doing it, because we love creating that content for other people that is in our favorite place. And we just want to share that love with people. So no, thank you so much for that, Charlie. We're coming towards the end, but obviously you're in Orlando now. Is there anything that you're really looking forward to over the years ahead, to like getting stuck into, or things to explore in America now that you're over there permanently?
I'm really excited for Epic Universe. That's going to be
oh my god, yes, cool. Yes.
I am a really, really big Harry Potter fan, and they're opening the Ministry of Magic section. So I'm really excited. And also to be here at the opening of a theme park. Like, I haven't been here while a theme park has opened. And I know it's an expansion, but it's still its own brand new park. So I'm really excited to witness that, because I think it will be absolutely incredible.
Oh, honestly, we can't wait either. We'll definitely book our tickets to come out. But we are at the end, Charlie, and we have to ask. We ask everybody on this podcast, and we always ask them at the end, but are you ready for your final question?
Yes, I think so.
Charlie, what is your deepest, darkest Disney confession?
I don't like the Rose and Crown. Food. Not the Rose and Crown. No, not the Rose and Crown in general. Love going there for a drink, but the food, I'm so sorry. It's terrible.
That was like a tease when you went, the Rose and Crown. I don't know if it was your Wi-Fi, but there was like a 3-second gap. We were like...
No, oh my goodness. So the food's... You're not feeling food, though.
No, so I just think it's not a very accurate representation of the food that we have in England. I mean, like the names of it are sure, but the way that it's cooked, I have only dined there once and I was really tired. And I came out like very sad and disappointed because I just wanted a taste of home. And I was like, oh, this is not it. Although I will say the chippy is like, that's pretty good. My parents go every time that they come and I eat their leftovers. But but yeah, the food in the Rosen Crown is not for me. So that, I guess, is probably my deep dark Disney secret because I think that people expect me to like it because I'm from England and loads of my friends work there, but I actually don't.
Do you know what? Totally fair. Like at the end of the night, if there's ever food left over and the gods of Disney grace us with some food, to be honest, none of us really like. We're like, okay, we'll eat it because it's free and we're hungry. You know what I mean? But it's not the only, do you know what? The one thing that I will say that I would never ever eat in the UK, but I will always eat at the Rose and Crown is a Scotch egg. Don't ask me why, but I will.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay,
this is.
interesting.
Do you know what my home away from home food while I was over there was Liberty Tree Tavern, just roast, like proper roast dinner, like eat as much as you want. That was I loved. I wouldn't go there on holiday because firstly it's too hot to eat a roast dinner most of the time in Orlando, and secondly I just think I can have this in a couple of weeks. But while I was out there living over there, that was my home away from home food, good old unlimited roast dinner. It was like being at Toby Coffrey.
But that is a good
I'll have to try
confession.
that.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, you honestly, a good confession, because I bet people will just think that everyone loves the Rose and Crown food if we're British. But yeah, to be fair, that's a good one. Thank
Well,
you.
Charlie, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today. I'm so, like I said, I'm so happy to hear how your story's just worked out for you, and that you're out there doing what you're doing, and also that you're real as well. Like, I mean, it's not all sunshine and rainbows all the time, and I think that's what that's like, as much as we come as podcasts because we want to tell people about the amazing things you can do working for the company, or the experiences you can get from it afterwards as well. It can be a real challenge at times. Like, it's not a fantasy, it is real life. And it's really important for people to know that as well. So thank you so much for coming on. And obviously, like I said, all of Charlie's socials are gonna be in the description for this episode and over on our Instagram as well. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Charlie.
Thank you both so much for having me. It was my first podcast ever, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I was very nervous, but I really had a great time. So you guys are great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming. Oh, honestly, it has been a pleasure. But thank you so much for listening to Confessions of a Disney Cast Member, and goodbye for now.
Well, here we are, and here we were.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram for episode updates and more Confessionist content. And before you go, we'd love for you to hit that subscribe button.
That's all we've got time for. So for now, Disney Confessionist over and out.